Welcome to the Activation Podcast, brought to you by the Conscious Resistance Network. I'm your host, Derek Brose, and every episode of the Activation Podcast is going to explore solutions that I've written about and that I've talked about through my 10 years as a journalist and an activist. And we're also going to talk with interesting guests who are bringing you the most cutting-edge solutions in the areas of health, permaculture, technology, community organizing, and anything else that we can come across. Thank you for being here with me. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 4 of the Activation Podcast. And this week we're talking with a friend of mine, Joe Martino of Collective Evolution. We're going to talk with Joe about some really important topics. First, before we bring Joe on officially and get into this, I do want to recommend, if you haven't followed Joe's work, which we're going to talk about today, specifically if you haven't heard a podcast that we did prior to this, I do recommend listening to that in addition to this conversation, because I feel like, Joe, I feel like this is basically going to be like a part two of the conversation we previously had. But how you doing today, man?
Doing good. You know, it's an interesting world out there every day, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. So the reason I mentioned the previous podcast, man, is because honestly, that was one of the my favorite interviews that I've done in a while because of the questions that you put forth to me. And just we have a real easy kind of casual back and forth. And we were talking in that conversation about some of the ways that, you know, I think that, and I think both of us see limitations or flaws in some of the current field of alternative and independent media. And I want us to continue that conversation today for, you know, the audience. But just in case there are people tuning in who might be, you know, unfamiliar with your work or maybe only know the name Collective Evolution, why don't you go ahead and give us a little bit of your background, how you got into this line of work, you know, for the last decade, how you started Collective Evolution?
Yeah, sure. To sort of keep things pretty brief and concise, essentially, I was going through a time in my life where I was, you know, coming out of high school, going into the college years and not really knowing what I wanted to do. Under some of the, you know, societal peer pressure, I chose to just take the college route. I was in and dropping in and out of different programs over the course of time for the next like 3 or 4 years, really not feeling good about, you know, the idea that, hey, you know, I'm going and doing something because I feel like society is asking me to do that, as opposed to I really feel passionate about taking this direction and I want to do that. So it put me in a position where I was thinking a lot about life and what it means and, you know, what I want to do and where I want things to go and how I want things to look. And eventually I was sort of given a little nudge from a therapist I was actually seeing at that time because I was dealing with like some anxiety and that sort of stuff. And I wanted somebody to talk to. And she said, well, why don't you just drop out of school and really do what you want to do, make choices that align with what you want, as opposed to what everybody else wants of you. And the moment I did that, very interesting thing happened in my life. All of a sudden I started realizing how important it was for me to make choices based on what I wanted, for me to follow things that I enjoy and that are important to me, as opposed to just kind of falling in line. And that led to the creation of Collective Evolution eventually, because, you know, I had asked myself a lot of interesting questions over the years growing up as a kid. I was interested in a lot of sort of outside the box thinking. And I thought, well, how many other people might be interested in exploring some of these ideas on a website? You know, a blog at the beginning is really what it was. And so I would just share these ideas. And that's kind of how it came to be. Over the course of time, journalism entered into the equation a little bit more, documentary filmmaking. And, you know, now we're all the way up to the point of covering anything from current events to running education programs through courses and that sort of stuff. Really just all under the main mission of, you know, really trying to help humanity move towards a world where we can truly thrive. We can be living in a way that works for everybody, but there's a number of barriers that stop that from happening. And we kind of discuss what all those barriers are, because some of them are a little less obvious to people than we might think. So that's pretty well what we got going on.
Yeah. And, you know, what I said in our last conversation, and I'll just repeat for this audience, is that I really love what Collective Evolution has done over the years, specifically because I feel like it's very much in alignment with what I aim to do with the Conscious Resistance and now with the Activation Podcast, where, you know, on either of our websites, you're going to find articles that are, you know, hard-hitting investigations of, say, Jeffrey Epstein, right, or looking into that whole phenomenon. But then you might also find something exploring consciousness and meditation. And then, you know, of course, aliens and UFOs is a very hot topic right now. And I do want to get into that in just a bit. But I just want to acknowledge that I appreciate that. I think that is definitely something that is missing from media. And it's unfortunate that in the past,
You know, even talking about UFOs would get you labeled as a certain type of media. Like, that's not maybe media that we take serious or we take credible. And then as we'll talk when we get into that subject, now here's the mainstream ready to let us know, oh, it's okay to talk about aliens now and UFOs. But yeah, talk a little bit about that for a moment, though. Was there, on your part, did you ever have any thoughts or kind of pushback or reconsiderations that like, oh, maybe I shouldn't say this thing? Or was there anything that you ever felt like was off the table because of, you know, you were worried about credibility or anything like that?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And, you know, I'm going to suggest, and I don't know this for sure, but, you know, people are all different. But, you know, when I first started this, I was 22. And perhaps at 22, you know, you don't think about things in the same way you might think about them when you're 33, which is, you know, the age I am now. And, what I think about is, you know, we sometimes, you know, is it credible to talk about UFOs? Like, back then I was like, well, I mean, there's what I think is credible evidence, which is evidence that a reasonable person would think is, yeah, this is meaningful to look at. It doesn't prove anything, but it's credible enough that it's reasonable, and we could see how this plus this plus this may lead to this. So let's explore that and let's see what that might mean, right? That's what credible evidence is. And when it came to the UFO or alien subject, for example, or anything, even vaccinations, for example, there was enough credible evidence to say, look, this conversation is not black and white. And in a lot of ways, we're culturally treating it as it's black and white. And typically what it meant was, you can't talk about UFOs because that's just a conspiracy theory, or you can't talk about vaccines because we already know that there's nothing wrong with them. It's totally fine. And we always just kind of covered them because we thought, why should anything be off the table? Perhaps that was our naivety back in the day. I'm open to exploring that possibility. You know, has it hurt our brand over the years? That's another interesting question. Depends on who you ask, right? In some ways, some people will say, yeah, you know, I'm glad you guys covered everything. And I'm glad you covered it when not that many other people were talking about it, because it helped to okay a lot of other people into talking about it. In other ways, I look at how our brand has been dragged through the mud over the years for talking about things that today is now totally acceptable. You know, UFOs is one of those topics. Like back then we were crazy. Like there's you know, fact-checking websites or you know, rational wiki websites that say, oh, and this collective evolution, they talk about ETs and UFOs, and this is just crazy nonsense, right? I wonder what those people would say now, right? Has the damage and defamation they've done to our brand, which now is, hey, maybe that wasn't such a bad thing to be talking about. You know, do we get that repair as an alternative media company now? Do people suddenly go, hey, yeah, you know what? Maybe that brand was credible. We don't really get that to be fixed. So it's a very difficult sort of thing to be seeing happening. And I want to be transparent about the fact that I do feel a little bit frustrated at times, especially now when I see, you know, the mainstream media picking up on a conversation, for example, UFOs, and they're the hero now, right? And I'll admit it can seem petty that I'm saying that from the regards of, like, doesn't it just matter that at least now we're talking about it on a mainstream level? And I recognize that, but at the same time, I feel like, you know, we worked so hard and we said so much over the years, and if we continue to just always go to the mainstream and let them dictate what we're allowed to talk about, are we basically extending the amount of time it takes to really come to a convergent understanding of things, as opposed to just sort of bringing alternative media into the question and start saying, maybe I don't need alternative media to dictate what is okay to talk about. Maybe I can look at alternative media, in which in some cases, they're absolutely 5 or 10 years ahead of their time. Maybe we can speed up our conversations a lot faster and look at things a little bit more openly. And sometimes it just, you know, feels a little frustrating to see how that happens.
Yeah. And I'm going to go ahead and second that with you, man. I mean, maybe it is petty for us or whatever, you know, cause like you said, in the end, like we're like, we want the issues to get out there. We want the information to get out there, but I can absolutely say the same thing, man. I mean, I was, and I'm sure Collective Evolution, I made a documentary about Jeffrey Epstein in 2018. I, you know, went to his house. I've been like investigating for a couple of years prior to that. And I put that out in October 2018, and it went viral and was doing well. And then, of course, a year later, he gets arrested, and everybody hears the name. And the credit all goes to the Miami Herald, that they broke the story. They, you know, and I'm looking at, like, I know I did this. I know that, you know, so-and-so did this, and this other outlet did this, and they've been talking about this. And it is frustrating. It is a little bit – I think what's most frustrating, though, because, again, in the end, good. The information's out there. More people are talking about it. But it really just – doesn't feel good to know that, say, you're trying to share this with friends and family about whatever the issue may be, UFOs, Epstein, et cetera. And they're like, you know what? You're crazy, man. There's nothing to it. But then the second it's on the Miami Herald or CNN or Washington Post or whatever, well, now it's okay to talk about it. It's sort of like you were hinting at there. So I think that is the unfortunate aspect of it, is it's not so much that our egos are invested because we want to be the one that's credited for breaking this story. I mean, it does feel nice when people recognize the work you put in, of course, but ultimately it's because we see that it's that sort of mentality that is letting the mainstream drive the conversation. You know, okay, now they've said it, we can talk about it. It's okay. You know? And so I want to, now let's move forward a little bit to where we're at now. We're with a new president now, since I don't think Biden was in office when we last spoke. We were kind of looking at what's going to happen and everything. And prior to this conversation, we were talking privately, and you got this thought in my head of, like, what is the purpose of the truth movement? You know, where are we at? We're in 2021 now. Again, new president, for whatever that may mean to people. And, you know, there's lots of changes happening in the US and globally, and, you know, COVID, there's so much going on. And I think that's a good point in time to stop and reflect. Okay, some of us, you, me, been doing this for 10 years, others 15, 20 years, and others even before then. But let's say generally the movement has been around 10 to 15 years now with the internet, and people have kind of grown up in these ideas and seen it. And the last 4 years, though, have taken us for a whirlwind with the introduction of things like QAnon, the introduction of lots of people on the scene, so to speak, who don't have very much credibility and also don't really have the same concern that I know you and I share towards putting out truthful, factual, documented information. They're okay and content with just being loose with whatever they say. And if that leads people astray or if that gives them false hope, so be it. And so I want us to kind of reflect on that. First, let's start with the QAnon situation. Like, what is your thoughts on how that has shifted or changed, or if you think it has shifted or changed since Trump has clearly left office and people were hanging on to the idea that he wasn't going to leave office, there was still going to be something. You know, we had the January 6th event, but there are still plenty of people who are QAnon followers. You know, they might not be as vocal at the moment, but they're still out there. They're still holding out for various hopes. They've maybe gone into different sectors, different areas. I know you've covered the whole conspirituality angle between conspiracy and spiritual world. But yeah, talk a little bit about that, like how you think the truth movement is evolving with, in relation to things like QAnon and, you know, a new presidency and Trump kind of out of the limelight. What do you think is, you know, on the plate for us?
Yeah. I mean, Trump being out of office, I mean, is he really out of office, or is the mainstream media just showing us fake images of Biden being in office? You know, obviously I'm poking fun there, and you know, I do that to lighten the mood. I don't mean to poke fun at other people, but I say that because I think this is an important part of the conversation. Because when you look at the QAnon thing, I'm preparing a piece right now that looks at you know, conversation and semantics and the term conspiracy theory a little bit more meaningfully, and sort of ask the question of, like, you know, can we start agreeing on certain things? Like, look, there's a conspiracy hypothesis, say, and then a conspiracy theory, say. And why these two distinctions are important is because, you know, if we have to use a term conspiracy, right, which is not the greatest term because there's so much negative connotation, but let's say we had to use a term, it's already in the public conjecture, you know, let's stick with it for a second. If we agree that a conspiracy theory is relative to, like, a scientific theory, which is to say, here's an idea we put forth, we think this makes sense, and we think this makes sense because we actually have credible, i.e. reasonable evidence to support that this is likely to be true. There's still a degree of uncertainty there, but you know, this is a pretty solid theory. Versus a hypothesis, which says, look, I have an idea. This may be happening. We don't know yet. And at the moment, we have no evidence to support this, but we're kind of curious about what this might be. And the difference between those two things is the very clear distinction that one has no evidence, and I should say one has no evidence and the other one does have evidence. And we can see that. So we can understand that it's more reasonable to see one as more true, or sorry, as one as more clear and more certain than the other. Yet in both situations, we're still holding a little bit of uncertainty to say, we don't know. I think there's a very big difference between conspiracy hypotheses and conspiracy theories when we're looking at so many things that are happening in our world. If we're searching for, secretive sort of powerful people, you know, taking certain actions that may not be in the best interest of other people, I think it's very important to look at what we have evidence for and what we don't. And for me, something like QAnon was something that, you know, people are going to argue on this, but if we really look at it, we didn't really have any credible evidence to support that the story, i.e. Trump was there to eliminate the deep state. There was really not a lot of credible evidence to support that. What we were hearing was these interesting drops that may have suggested a link between the drops and access to Trump. It may have suggested that. But what does that mean? We have no idea, right? And so we're filling in this entire hypothesis with no real evidence to support it and presenting it as if it's a highly credible theory. That distinction is really important. And I think it's overlooked by a lot of people because in this space, a lot of times there's a natural inclination, a natural feeling to want to feel like we know the answer, to want to feel like we're clear on something, to want to feel like we have a level of certainty about something because it can be uncomfortable to sit in uncertainty, right? So for me, the QAnon thing was a little bit of an illustration as to even the general state of ourselves as people, how comfortable are we with uncertainty? And what are we willing to give up, i.e. clarity, when we try to just be certain, even though we can't. And I think that that's an important thing to think about when we're looking at QAnon. I think it is disappearing quite a bit because we're seeing that people are going, well, hold on a second. How will I look now that Trump's fully out of office? How will I look if I still hold on to this idea? I might look a little more crazy than I did when he was in office. So some of the people are exiting for that. Other people are realizing, hey, maybe there wasn't really a whole lot there to begin with. They're exiting for that. Other people might be holding on to it because, you know, it might actually be scary for them to say, can I face other people if I admit I was wrong? Right? That's a difficult thing for some of us to do. Am I willing to forego the worldview that I built out of, you know, the whole QAnon story? Sometimes people are very uncomfortable with doing that. And in that last little piece there, we have to also look are what we call, you know, just the general population that don't believe in conspiracy. Are they willing to put their worldview on the line to explore conspiracy, right? The idea here is that this idea of being uncertain and how uncomfortable that can be goes both ways. It's in the mainstream community as much as it can be in the alternative community. And I think a lot of what the current culture and current dynamic of what's going on is asking us to do is sit in uncertainty and learn to be okay with it and learn to really explore evidence from a way where we can admit where there's uncertainty, admit where there's credibility, and admit where there isn't. And see where that leads us, which is a cultural and a collective process.
You said so much good things there, Joe. I'm really looking forward to the piece you were describing there because I like the distinction of, you know, conspiracy hypothesis between a theory because, again, it is a nuanced situation. And oftentimes a theory that is later confirmed as fact starts out as just a simple hypothesis based on intuition or one piece of information and, you know, another tangential piece of information that you sort of glue together that eventually you get more data and then you can confirm it and then it becomes hard facts. But there are a lot of people I've noticed in the alternative space, just generally, obviously within this conversation, we're including, let's say, the UFO community, the spiritual community, the conspiracy community, the truth, you know, whatever labels, freedom community. There's a lot of folks though who do, I think, hang out a lot in those parts of the community, those channels, those content creators that specialize in speculation and hypothesis. And while that can be entertaining or fun, you know, to some degree, it's, I think it leaves some people coming away thinking, wow, this is the truth. I know the truth. Even again, though, when there's not hard facts about it, that information then goes and becomes a part of their daily routine, their daily knowledge of what they think is going on based on what might be going on or could be going on. And then they repeat that and then it kind of goes out there. And so, I mean, I think that is an important distinction. And then the other thing you mentioned, which I feel like we might've touched on this on your podcast, is this idea of uncertainty, right? I've had to long ago come to the acceptance that I'm never going to figure it all out. Like maybe, but realistically, probably not. And in the beginning, I think, and I'm sure you can, you know, empathize with this. It's like, we're going through the kind of frantic phase of trying to figure out everything we can, get to the bottom of the rabbit hole as quick as possible. And you take a lot of left and right turns, and maybe you're, well, wrong way. That is a dead end. I'm going to go this way. And you're just searching and searching. And it's like, we're hoping that we're going to find the one document or the one book or the one documentary that just solves it all for us. And it's, you know, everything's taken care of. But, you know, with time, I've come to accept and realize that, look, unless one day, you know, I get kidnapped and then before my life is taken from me, they, here's the grand reveal of everything that's going on. It's all aliens or it's all, you know, whatever. Except for that situation, I'm probably going to go the rest of my life learning more, getting more informed and getting more pieces of the puzzle, but probably never the grand reveal. And I think that is difficult for a lot of people. It's scary to say, like, look, we might not know. And we don't know for certain things. You know, we know that there are lies about 9/11. We know that there are lies about COVID. Do we know exactly what happened? I don't think any of us really do. So I think that is something that people need to wrestle with. Did you want to add anything else to that?
Well, it depends. If you were going to jump into the idea of what is the truth movement, I feel like it fits a little bit in this moment. Is that fair to jump into?
Yeah, go for it.
Right. So the interesting part of it is, like, you know, you brought up the idea of, like, you know, okay, we may not know something, which invites this idea of we need uncertainty to some extent. And then we also sometimes feel, though, in this space, it's like, no, but I do know. And I absolutely do know what the truth is. And, you know, a friend of mine, he actually says to people a lot, he's like, well, do you really know what the truth is? Or do you know that something in particular might actually just be wrong, but you don't know what the truth is, right? So there's a bit of a distinction there in that, you know, that this piece over here is not true. It's wrong, but it doesn't mean that you know exactly what the story is. And there's a difference between saying, well, we have the actual truth and, you know, this thing is wrong. And sometimes that's most important. And, you know, that works very well in 9/11, for example, which, you know, back in 2012, when we released our last documentary, I think it was 2013, actually, I chose 9/11 as one of the big, you know, pieces that acted as a catalyst for a lot of people to start thinking outside the box. And the reason for that was if you actually look at the amount of effort, the amount of credible evidence, the amount of science that has been put forth in studying what happened on 9/11, we can start to see very clearly, not that we know exactly what did happen, but that we know that what we're told happened did not happen. So we have to start at that point saying, well, Why are they wrong? Why was the official story wrong? What is the purpose of the official story being wrong? Is it complete accident? What are the implications of whether or not it was purposefully put out as being wrong? Like, we can start exploring these ideas and start asking the question, you know, well, was there a conflict of interest there? Like, when we look at the amount of control that came, the amount of changes in laws that came, who profited? Like, there's so many different pieces to what unfolded after 9/11 that give a lot of motivation as to why we might want to understand as a society how it's important that the official story is verifiably wrong. And again, we don't know what did happen. And so you ask the question then, okay, so what's the purpose of this alternative movement that is seeking to explore different ideas? And one of the things in there is really to ask the question, and this sort of relates into the whole QAnon, the conspiracy hypothesis and the entertainment side of things, which is to say, what are we actually trying to do? Right? Are we trying to find the truth? Are we trying to take out a deep state or a cabal? Are we trying to, you know, make the world a better place? What are we trying to do? And the way we answer that question might be different individually. My suggestion is we might want to really think about that and see if we can maybe come together with something and really just see, like, what are we actually trying to achieve in exploring a lot of these ideas? Because if we were to come to the conclusion that, you know, hey, at the end of the day, we do want to create a better world where we can thrive, where there's less suffering, where, you know, we can implement solutions that allow people to live a very high quality of life around the world, no matter what. if that's the what we want, then we have to say, okay, well, how are we going to get there? And can we recognize that there's a mainstream culture, if you will, and where are they at? How would I speak to that person? How would I convey information to that person? Is it useful to convey information to that person in a way where I'm telling them they're stupid, where I'm telling them they're a useless sheep, you know, that's just making everything bad? Does that bring me towards the end result, or does it perhaps not, right? And I'm not saying I know the answer to this. I'm saying if we think about that, we might start to gain clarity on why it may be extremely important to be able to explore a lot of these things from a more, you know, responsible or a more grounded or a more credible way, right? Because that sort of credibility can speak to the mainstream culture more easily. Now, does it suggest that the mainstream culture, just because you speak about things credibly, does it mean that they're going to listen all the time? No, right? We see that with the UFO conversation. I mean, how long has it been presented credibly before, you know, and only now are people seeing that it's okay. But then here's the other kicker, is if we have a huge part of the population that is interested in a lot of these alternative ideas that are putting forth a culture that says, well, by looking into these alternative ideas, I might act like this. We might be very certain about things, and we know this is the truth, and we know blah blah blah. And you know, you've seen it out there before. The people that are extreme, that they think everything is a conspiracy, they think every mainstream media agenda every story is an agenda, and everything is a lie, and nothing can ever be trusted, and blah blah blah. That extremism, which does, you know, is a part of this community in a decent amount, right? That extremism is used as the example to which the mainstream can point and say, you want to become like that? You find that credible? You think that's reasonable to think about, right? And the more of that goes on, the more easy it is to take that smaller portion that might be taking it from a more credible point of view and just paint them with that same brush, right? So what this is a call to is asking, you know, can we look at how responsible we're being? And when I'm saying responsible, I'm not trying to like create this idea where, you know, we need to, oh, everything that the mainstream does is right or whatever. No, I'm just trying to say, what can we control? What can we really control about ourselves, about what we do, about how we go about things? Have we had bad thinking at times, which I'm sure we all have, right? Sometimes we have to change our minds about things. Sometimes we learn more things. Sometimes we come to greater clarity. But the question is like, how active are we as a culture in actually trying to weed through our biases, right? To trying to improve our critical thinking, to holding and demonstrating the importance of having some uncertainty, the importance of conspiracy hypothesis, you know, versus conspiracy theory. How much is that really demonstrated in culture, within the space? And we find that it's honestly, if I'm being honest, it's not that prominent, right? It is in some of the quieter voices out there, but there's some large voices where it's sort of dictating, it's really telling people, here's a way to act. And like it or not, a lot of times we are choosing to align with that culture based on what everyone else is doing, to some extent.
Yeah. And I appreciate that you always, make sure to include that thought, Joe, because I think it is important that any listener hearing this, you know, we're not sort of talking down to anybody, instead, like really trying to understand. And I think that ultimately it does come down to personal responsibility, right? Like we could just be the type to say, well, everything from the mainstream is lies and, you know, they're putting out all this fake news, but clearly we know that fake news, and I mean that in the truest sense, not just, you know, what they call us, but actual fake, you know, not real information, it doesn't just share itself on Facebook. It gets shared by people who follow our work and who are in these communities and who don't take that personal responsibility and who, you know, contribute to, I think, the kind of, you know, the lowering of quality of information within the space. And it gives the mainstream a really convenient excuse to say, look at all these people sharing this fake information. It's coming from these websites, or, you know, this is why we need to censor and limit and everything. But it really is a big part of responsibility. And, you know, when you were explaining kind of your thoughts about 9/11, which I feel very strongly about, is, you know, very similarly, since I first started going to New York back in 2011, you know, I saw all these different divisions with that particular movement. And I saw that there were the people who figured, like, this is the theory. I know what happened. And if you don't believe that, then you're obviously a shill, you're fake, you know, get out of here. There was a lot of like division. And to me, as a young activist, just waking up coming into it, it was like, whoa, guys, what's, you know, I didn't even realize that was a thing. And I remember telling the people in the streets of New York while they're arguing with each other, is like, look, guys, we all know we were lied to. That's one thing we can agree on. Maybe we disagree on where it happened, how exactly, who, whatever. But the point is, we know that we were lied to. And, you know, as you were kind of sharing a little bit about that, it was making me think, you know, maybe the truth movement, maybe we're not so good at uncovering truth and we're better at uncovering lies. You know, we can spot the lies, but we don't always know the truth. We have uncovered truths in many areas, I would say. But, you know, it's a lot easier to point at something and to say, I know that's not right. And I can show you why that's not right. But that doesn't always mean that we know what did happen. And I think that there's this expectation, especially on the side of us, what we do, content creators. And this is kind of where I want to move the conversation, is how it affects us, right? Because there's this momentum, and I know you've kind of talked to me about this as well, where there's like, because of Q and because of other things, it seems like there's just this amping up that the stories have to get more crazy, more intense. There has to be more hidden secret documents and more things that only this secret inside source knows. And it's like, if it doesn't come from that, and if it's not framed like, this is a red alert emergency broadcast, we've got the secret hidden documents from our sources or whatever, then maybe some people pass it over like, oh, whatever, collective evolution, I'm not going to read that article. Conscious resistance, yeah, that's old news. Like, instead of looking at new information, like maybe, for example, just as one example, something I've personally experienced, there's a really important story about human trafficking. But it has nothing to do with Jeffrey Epstein or the celebrities or Hollywood. So people are like, yeah, whatever, that's not as important. Like, yeah, human trafficking, but that's just human trafficking. It doesn't involve the cabal and the elite. So clearly it's not a big deal. There's a desensitizing that is going on. And so I want to get your thoughts on that desensitizing, but also how that affects us as content creators, because I've seen some people, and I'm not going to name names or, you know, really hate on anybody, but I think that there are people who, especially during the QAnon time, started following the crowd and they're like, well, look, I got to have something breaking. I got to have some new information, right? And so maybe they embellish, maybe they lie, maybe they exaggerate, or like we were talking about, they just stay in the speculation hypothesis theory without any evidence, just because they know that people are attracted to that kind of, you know, theorizing, speculative, you know, thing. And again, that they might be at this point desensitized to information that is equally important, but not coming from, you know, super secret hidden sources. So what are your thoughts on that?
Hold that thought. Guys, before we go any further, I want to tell you a little bit about a project that I recently launched called the Holistic Self-Assessment Online Course. Now, some of you know that I released this book, The Holistic Self-Assessment, in April 2018. And essentially, this book is the culmination of the experiences I had when I went to prison, dealing with addiction, dealing with depression, and suicide attempts. This is the process that I took myself through to get to know who I am, to get to know my principles, to get to align my relationships, my words, my thoughts, and actions with those principles. Overall, it's meant to be a self-empowerment, self-help guide that can help you start accomplishing your goals by aligning your principles with your actions. The book is available to download for free, and I'll include that link below. But if you're interested, I did recently launch a new online course, which you can find on the University of Reason, aka Autonomy. I partnered with them recently, and they created this whole online course for me. It's 9 weeks long. You can watch and follow along and read the book as I go through each chapter. I read it with you, and I offer some tips and some exercises. There are two different options. You can either do DIY, where you just go through the 9-week course yourself, or if you want to have personal one-on-one sessions with me, there's also an option for that. So check that out, guys. I'll include both links below. Let's get back to the podcast.
Yeah, it's the desensitizing is a big one. And again, it's one of those things that, you know, we started to think about a lot, you know, the entertainment side of things. When I had a conversation with the CEO of Gaia at one point. And this isn't a knock at Gaia. He honestly told me this. And he said, you know what? He's like, I'm not going to claim that we know what the truth is, or that we, are going to put out content that is, you know, just focused on what's right and what's accurate. We're putting out content to give people options, stuff to look at. And, what that revealed to me was something interesting. Like, you know, it could have changed, right? I'm going to speak on this as of 20, I don't know, I think it was like 15. He told me this. So I can't say that they're doing this today. But at that time, they didn't really have like a content or quality filter or like a fact-checking filter or anything like that for some of the stuff that went on the platform. And what that kind of showed to me was, you know, the intention of the company might be a little bit more geared towards, for example, providing an entertainment platform for people to explore new, interesting, curious ideas, which I think has its place. And I think it's fantastic. I think there's nothing wrong with that. But I wonder sometimes what the implications are of, you know, if people are watching a show like Cosmic Disclosure, which I watched quite a bit of, and I'm not saying that it's true or false or that I know for sure, but, you know, a lot of people have been extremely critical of some of the stuff that's been on the Gaia platform, like that show, saying, you know, is this even factual? Has this been vetted? How do we know? You know, if we're, I know you didn't want to name names, and I'm totally cool with that. I went through this a lot, and actually I was watching a show not too long ago where another guy came out sort of decided to name names about Brian Rose. And he said something that kind of inspired me a little bit, because I have always tried not to name names in this space, because I don't want to put other people down. I don't want to gossip. I don't want to get into drama, but I sometimes wonder, and this is the way the guy put it, you know, if we don't say something about it, right? How are other people supposed to hear that signal and reflect on it themselves, right? So if I say, for example, I questioned deeply what was going on with David Wilcock during the whole Q thing. The reason why I questioned that was because I'm looking at what he's doing, and I'm looking at the claim for sources, and I'm looking at none of the stuff's coming true. And I'm asking myself, is he credible? Is he questioning his sources? Is he, and for me to understand whether or not I can, you know, that's accurate, or how else are we going to make sense of something David Wilcock saying, we probably have to come together as a collective and discuss, which means we have to be able to say, hey, did you hear what David said? You know, what are your thoughts? Is it accurate? Versus, hey, have you heard that claim that maybe this, and that? You know, sometimes we have to just come out and say it, right? And again, it's not to gossip. It's not to put him down. I mean, David has made some fantastic contributions to this space over the course of time, and I would never take that away from him. But we have to question, you know, we all do make mistakes, and sometimes we can make mistakes for a long time. And if we're not critiquing each other and saying, hey, where are you getting that from? Or, you know, what's going on? We have to understand, like, you know, he has a massive audience, and, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people at time are tuning into that stuff. You know, my feeling has always been, you know, we have a pretty big audience. I want to be responsible for what I put out there. And if it's not accurate, that's a big deal. You know, did he know that what he was putting out wasn't true? Did he question it? Did he feel like he had to bring out information because that's what his audience wanted? Did he notice what you and I notice, which says, you know, if I'm not extreme and if I'm not bringing out something that's highly entertaining and highly engaging, nobody listens? I don't know the answer to what was going on, but I feel like we have to talk about it, right? And that's kind of what, you know, we've really... To go back to the question, you know, where you said it's hard for sometimes the average viewer of information who may not be in the office every day or sitting doing what you're doing every day and working with some of your colleagues and stuff like that, it can be hard to understand what goes on and what thought processes are there and how much desensitization or how much the entertainment side of this space really hinders not only the ability for us to financially sustainably do this work, but also to weed through the amount of noise that's out there that you could make an extremely good argument that says that is actually doing more to harm the overall conversation than it is to advance it forward. And I'll just cap that off by saying, I do understand though, the value in going through a short period, like maybe we did with the last 4 years, where we see a very obvious moment of, hey guys, this is what happened when we went down a path that wasn't the best thought out. Now that we have that experience, let's reflect on that and make sure we don't do that in the future. So I can see the value in that as well.
Yeah. And since you brought up David Wilcock, I definitely have a couple of thoughts on that, you know, I'll add to that. You know, I agree with everything you said there. And I'm going to remind everybody specifically 1 year ago, by the time you're hearing this conversation, 1 year ago, April 2020, COVID had been kind of in the news for about a month and a half or so. And there's of course, lots of theories going around. There was a ship off the east coast of the US and a west coast, and these apparently had some occult meaning, and there's going to be 3 days of darkness and all, you know, I'm sure you remember some of that stuff. And look, Wilcock was one of the people pushing this, and I don't think that those things should just be forgotten. He did a video that was like 2 hours live on YouTube. It had, last time I looked at it a while back, had 4 million views, if it's still up. And like you said, how many people took that information? He was doing this live stream. We've got these secret sources. My sources are matching what Q is saying. There's going to be 3 days of darkness. Don't worry. You know, the internet's going to go down. Like, this wasn't just some sort of vague claim. These are very specific, you know, claims about things that were coming up with dates and it's, you know, et cetera. And I don't know. I mean, it absolutely is frustrating to me as somebody who I know works hard, and somebody like yourself and plenty of other people who I know, like you said, we have teams, or even those who work on themselves, who just grind away every day to, you know, strive to bring accurate information and to really fact check ourselves and do it in a way, but still also allow for that exploration like you're talking about, and being, because one thing I'll notice is whenever I start going down this road, I see some folks get defensive, and maybe it's because they're fans of the people we're talking about, but it sort of goes to this place. Oh, so I guess you think nobody's allowed to speculate, right? Or, oh, only you know the truth. It kind of becomes really reactionary, just because I'm saying, hey, like, why don't we ask the, like you were saying, we need to have this conversation. Like, we should talk about it as a community. Like, hey, did anybody hear what this person said? Did you notice it didn't come true? How do you feel about that? What do you think, you know, especially those of you who gave them money or time, energy, et cetera, like, do you still trust this person? Because in my experience, you know, when we're speaking Wilcock specifically, I mean, he's made these same kind of claims since the late 90s. Like, he's been wrong plenty of times with a lot of these claims, and continues to, you know, sell out conferences and events, and I'm sure he's doing very well for himself. And this is not a dig on him. I mean, but I think that nobody is above accountability, and or nobody should be. And the second there's somebody who wants to be like, oh, well, no, like, I'm the top of the, you know, freedom movement, the truth movement, then nobody can question things I say. You just got to trust me. I think that's a really dangerous territory. And so I am glad that we've had this period over the last 4 years where a lot of claims came out, claims that were proven to be false, that people hopefully have had time to think about. But it is very problematic. And that, you know, it kind of leads into just continuing with this thought process of, you mentioned, like, with Gaia, and other, you know, other outlets, it could fit this same label, but there is a branding of conspiratainment, infotainment, right? And I think the reality is that the consumer needs to recognize that not everybody that you find on YouTube or whatever other platforms you use has the same intentions. I come at this very much as a journalist, recognizing that I'm not going to get accepted by the mainstream, but still taking myself serious enough that I want to do good investigative work. And I want people to know that when they see an article, a video, a documentary from me, they can trust it. They know that it's credible. I still don't want them to trust me blindly, but they can generally have some, okay, this guy is going to do good work. I can put some faith in his efforts, you know, and not everybody comes at that way. Some people, they just create videos online and they just crank them out, and, you know, they say whatever they want to say because they don't consider themselves journalists. So in their mind, they have no standards to hold up to. There's no, you know, barometer to aim at. I'm just a YouTuber. I'll say whatever I want. And then other people kind of just see themselves maybe as just like the every man or woman on the street, just putting out videos and sharing their thoughts. And sometimes coming from a journalistic standpoint, you know, there's a lot of mix and nuance in there. And I think that is another part that the viewer needs to be aware of, just part of that critical thinking and discerning process, is that when you tune into a video, who is the person? What's their background? How are they portraying themselves to you? You know, what is their credibility? Have they been wrong? Because a lot of times those videos go viral, whether it's Wilcock or whoever else, and people don't look into the sources of what this person's saying or who they are, or have they been wrong before? Who are they associated with? It's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. And it is unfortunate. But yeah, talk a little bit now about, like, the fact that there is no accountability in our movements. I mean, other than maybe some people have lost subscribers. Maybe some people have said, you know what, I had enough of that person. I'm not going to follow their email list anymore. I'm not visiting their website. Or if a story pops up from them, I'm going to be skeptical. But in another incident, you mentioned Brian Rose, the name of Brian Rose, and I'm sure many people here will be familiar with him. Again, in 2020, another person that was going super mega viral with his interviews of David Icke and others. And, you know, Well, I'll say one thing, two things about Brian Rose. One thing is my initial thoughts upon seeing his work is I had no idea who he was prior to seeing him go viral. I started looking into some of his stuff and, you know, he seemed more of like on the entrepreneurial side of things or kind of selling like motivation, self-help type stuff. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but it was just interesting to me. I'm like, why is this guy getting into the truther space? It's kind of, you know, an intriguing thing, but also from my experience as a journalist, and again, somebody who takes myself serious, when I saw his interview style, it wasn't what anybody, I would say, whether in the mainstream or even outside of the mainstream, would consider to be a credible way to interview somebody. He let David Icke just say whatever he had to say for hours and hours on without any sort of interjection or any say, well, hold on, David, let's dig into that a little bit. Let's unpack that. It was just, let him say whatever he's got to say, whether it's true, whether it's fake. And maybe some people, you know, enjoy that. Again, you got to trust that the audience is going to be able to discern. But that for me was a red flag. Maybe it's not a big deal to some people, but to me, it was like, that's not a good way to just get information out there. The second thing that came about, and this is what, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this whole thing, is he started fundraising last year and there was big promises, I think, of like, I'm going to build a blockchain platform, censorship free, once his Icke videos were getting taken down. And I believe he raised $1 million+. And I hadn't checked into the situation in a while, but, you know, we've been talking recently and I did look into it and it seems like there were some false promises. There were some things that haven't been delivered. There's maybe a lack of proof of wherever that money went. Using that situation as an example, you know, let's talk a little bit about the fact that there really isn't accountability. It's not that I'm saying we need to get the government involved to do something like that, but how do we as a community hold each other accountable?
Yeah, government regulations is the only option, I think. No, I'm just kidding. I think we're going back to building a culture. And I think that's why we're having conversations like this. And I think we're just kind of being honest about it. I'm not saying it's a super comfortable thing for all of us to go through. When I speak like this, sometimes I think, you know, yeah, there might be people listening that go, well, no, I think for myself and I'm a critical thinker and, you know, the audience should always be making their own decisions and stuff like that. And I say, absolutely. But, you know, I've also witnessed, and this is why I also take responsibility, is that I witness how easy it is for us to gain a certain level of trust in a source, and some of our questioning does start to go down. And you know, when we're living in hectic worlds where everything moves so fast, and you know, sometimes we're accumulating stress within ourselves, within our bodies, within our states of being over, you know, the course of time. We know this physiologically. We don't take in information as well. We don't critically think as well. We are spending less time with people. And when we spend less time with people, we're spending less time co-regulating and collectively, you know, coming up with ideas that are clear and that are salient. And when I see this kind of stuff continue, what we're really seeing is, in a sense, our society is making our biology work against us when it comes to, you know, making sense of what's going on. So it's a very meaningful thing to say, hold on a second. Can I really start looking at how clear my mind is when I'm exploring stuff, right? We just did a course on overcoming bias and improving critical thinking. And you know, our people are like having such a fantastic time with it because they're realizing like, wow, these are all like forms of distortions in my thinking that I had no idea I had. And that now that I'm looking at, say, even the COVID situation with some of the awareness of these distortions, I'm seeing things so much more clearly and I'm seeing where there is uncertainty and where there's not. And I, you know, and it doesn't mean that everybody suddenly knows the answer. It's just we're improving the way we're seeing and we're thinking and communicating about things. And so when we start looking at, for example, the Brian Rose situation where you brought up, is it an interview style that is conducive for bringing forward clarity in a situation? Some people would say, well, it doesn't matter. Freedom of speech, let David say what he wants to say. And I go, I fully agree with you. And I think David should be able to say whatever he wants to say. The question becomes is, at what point do we start saying, there's a difference between, okay, you just say whatever you want to say and put it out to millions and millions of people that in a very real way, everybody's just believing it, right? So many people, and not everybody, but so many people are just believing it. And then they're saying, this is true. 5G caused COVID, right? Do we know that? You know what I'm saying? Do we know that that's what happened? Was David saying that? Certainly, not necessarily, but it was very tricky. It was very muddy. People started going and destroying towers, in London, 5G towers. Am I saying that, you know, David's responsible for that? No, but I'm saying there are implications to certain things that happen. And we have to take responsibility for how there are different people on this planet and we're playing in different ways. And we are a community. We are not an individual. We're a community, right? And my actions in some way affect the community. And if I have a large audience and I say something, that's going to affect some members of the community differently than it's going to affect other members of the community. Do I want to be transparent about that? And if you say no, I'm going to say this to you. Vaccines affect some members of the community different from other members of the community. You're asking the government to say, disclose to people the dangers of vaccines. I'm sitting here asking, disclose that you don't have certainty and that some of the stuff that we're saying, we don't know the answer and that it is a complete hypothesis and that I have no idea of verifying my sources, right? This is transparency. This is disclosure, right? This is different from standing up there and making a video that says, you know, this is exactly what's happening. You know, this is going to come next. My sources say this. My sources are credible. Blah, blah, blah. We just have to be more honest. And as an audience or, you know, just as a community, because that's really what all of this is it's about adjusting this culture. It's about thinking about these things a little bit more deeply. It's about saying, you know, how might we be able to hold accountable, not by going and taking David Wilcock and smearing his name and hanging him in the streets or anything of that nature, but by saying, hey, David, like, what happened, brother? Like, you know, I spoke to his agent, maybe it was like 2017, 2016, somewhere in that range. And I had a conversation with them and they were inviting me to potentially be part of a particular project. And I said, you know, I'll be honest, I do have some questions first because, you know, at the time, you know, the QAnon situation was what it was. And I was seeing a lot of inconsistencies that I was bringing evidence to saying, look, I'm not sure that we should be so certain about this. And I presented to his agent, I said, look, I'm interested in being part of certain things, but I do believe it's extremely important that we start focusing on a culture of increasing some of the standards of what happens in this alternative media space, because I think it's going to come back to bite people in the ass. This was before the mass censorship came. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, mass censorship, it's so bad. I said, we've sat in our office and we saw it coming for years. We knew that it was going to come. Why did we know it was going to come? We saw how much crap information there was out there. Yeah, the government wants to censor certain things. Yeah, tech agencies want to, but people are also making it very easy for them to do that, right? And got to take responsibility for that. So, you know, behind the scenes, we had been working hard to try and get, you know, invite people to say, hey, can we look at whether or not we can be a little bit better about how we present things? I said to his agent at the time, I said, look, I know that the indictments, that whole story, it's false. There's not the amount of indictments that you're saying. And if you actually were to look into the data, it presents a different story than the fact that there's 100,000 indictments, all these deep state people are going to get arrested. A lot of those indictments are parking tickets. A lot of those indictments are traffic stops. Like, I'm sorry, nobody's going to jail for that kind of stuff, right? So the point here is that their response to me was they went silent and they changed the subject. I don't know why. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know why. I'm not going to suggest that it was because of money or because of whatever. I don't know the answer. But what I do know is there is a lack of desire. And I sometimes think the reason for that is because there's not a motivation necessarily to provide something that might take more work, right? I can tell you, these guys all work hard. They do. David and all those guys, they work hard to do what they do. They spend hours doing what they do. But it would take significantly more hours and potentially a much smaller audience if the extremity of what was being said wasn't as high. And if they were going and saying, look, this is all I know credibly, and the rest is just pure speculation, it would be a different story. But my thing is, I think we need to do that. You know, I think that's what has to happen here.
Yeah. And I appreciate you sharing that story. I do think that to me is like indicative at least of an unwillingness to go down that road that you were saying, hey, we need to, you know, think a little bit about our credibility here and the accuracy of what we're saying. And just on one final note there, as we start to wrap up here, I do think that, and again, without saying this about any of the people we've named here in the podcast specifically, but the fact of the matter is, knowing everything that we know, everything that Collective Evolution has uncovered, everything that I've uncovered and plenty of other outlets and that the mainstream acknowledges, we know for a fact that the intelligence agencies of the world seek to put out false information to discredit movements, to get us chasing, you know, fighting with each other, chasing, spinning our heads, like chasing our tails, all that kind of stuff, because it helps them out if we're more confused. And so I do think that people need to be aware of that. Sometimes it's not just that, oh, well, somebody said something and they made a mistake. Maybe there's other purposes, whether that means they themselves have, you know, another motive, or perhaps the people feeding them information could be having ulterior motives. Before we get to the solutions, man, I do want to mention that you are going to be speaking at the Greater Reset Activation and talk a little bit about that for a moment. But I mentioned it earlier and you said the word disclosure. So we had to talk about aliens for a second. And I don't know if I told you this before, man, but I think that you probably have a similar story, that this is definitely one of the topics I've been researching since I was like in elementary school, like, you know, before I took the conspiracy realm in a more serious way as I do as an adult. You know, as a young child, I would go to the library and read about Loch Ness Monster and UFOs and Bigfoot and spontaneous human combustion and disappearances and whatever sort of weird paranormal things I could get into. And it's always intrigued me. And I remember, though, being a kid and just reading about all these different reports and, you know, of, you know, claims of UFOs and historic things. And I guess as a little kid, you get treated, of course, like, well, you're just a naive little kid. Like, you know, you're into UFOs, it's cute or whatever, right? But in my mind, I'm like, people don't realize there's all this information. Like, what's, you know, how come nobody will take it seriously? And then fast forward, you know, 15, 20 years into the future, and here we are at a point where the mainstream is just kind of casually saying, yeah, oh yeah, by the way, the US military admits this is some craft. We don't know what it is. It broke the sound barrier. And next story, you know, not only are they casually talking about it, there's not really any kind of, there's no big like moment that I was expecting as a kid that like one day people are going to see that these things are real or something. And anyways, so my views though have evolved. I just don't really know where I stand at this point, Joe. I mean, there's a lot of people in the UFO space I don't trust for a lot of the same reasons we were just talking about with Wilcock and others. I don't know that I'll just say I don't trust the disclosure movement. And I say that kind of broadly. I know there's some people would say we're the disclosure movement and we're the real disclosure movement and all that sort of thing. But, you know, this idea that the government is slowly going to reveal the truth to us about UFOs, it's very difficult for me to accept without an ulterior motive. And also one of the first things I researched when I started to wake up was things like Project Bluebeam, the idea of a fake alien invasion, et cetera. And that's always been sitting in the back of my mind. You know, again, one of those things that I don't have the evidence that that plan is even real, but what that plan talks about, we definitely have the technology for holograms, fake things in the sky, et cetera. And we've seen that. So yeah, just, you know, let me know where are you at now these days with the whole UFO disclosure situation.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a fascinating subject. And I just to sort of cap something off, I do think that the vast majority of people that we've mentioned, they do mean well in everything that they do. I don't ever think that they seek to actually mislead people. You know, my question is just like, are we applying a really deep level of thinking and responsibility? That's all, you know, I just wanted that to be clear. But in terms of the UFO, you know, story and everything that's going on there, you know, the idea of a false flag, alien invasion, that sort of stuff, you know, I think that's on the table, right? There's been some interesting discussions over the years and people who have suggested that's absolutely what's part of, you know, uniting humanity under a single army to be able to say, hey, there's a single threat that is verifiably different from all other humans on the planet. And, you know, that they're extraterrestrial, right? So we can all unite under that war. Will that come? I don't know. Maybe, perhaps. There's some interesting evidence that might suggest that that is a very real possibility. You know, is there, you know, sort of like disinformation and different stuff in this space? One thing I'll say with that, because I think you make a great point about, infiltration that can sometimes exist in these spaces. We have a part to our course called Unfairly Judging a Source. And why I wanted to bring that up in this was, I don't ever want to, you know, suggest the idea that just because somebody may have been wrong once, or because that source over there may seem like they're not credible, that we never listen to them again, right? Because that would be unfairly judging them. So it says, well, they were wrong once, so they're always wrong. Same with the mainstream media. Well, they were wrong. I disagree with them on this, so I disagree with them on everything. It's important to be able to say, you know, let's look at everything on a case-by-case basis, because there may come a time where somebody does come with something and we really should listen. And so we should be able to say, how can I look at what they're presenting right now and see what partial truth or whatever it might be, see what clarity is there. And so with that, when we think about where, you know, the whole UFO thing is at, I definitely see that, you know, there's this moment where UFOs are now okay to talk about, right? Who's manning them is a different discussion. That's kind of where I think people are hoping there may be an answer coming up on June 18th, June 30th, whatever the release date there was for supposedly the big disclosure that's going to be coming from, the U.S. intelligence community there, which I think we can expect that there's going to be some sanitization there. I don't think we're going to get, you know, all the details, all the information, although I think that's what they're trying to present as what they're doing, you know, to a more mainstream audience who might not be able to see that nuance and how they've always sanitized the UFO discussion. But, you know, I sometimes think about this, you know, how many people, you know, and this is stepping outside of the conspiracy mind for a second and just, you know, just empathizing with people. How many people would actually have a really hard time in their current belief system if the government did come out and say, you know, they're probably, we know that there's non-human entities that are driving these craft. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying they shouldn't say that. What I'm saying is, think about how some people are going to react to that. For some people, that's going to be extremely difficult to accept, to the point where, you know, some people might, I don't know. That could be traumatizing to a lot of people. Again, I'm not saying don't bring it out. I'm saying we've created a culture where we've made it difficult for people to explore this stuff because we've lied for so long. There's been such a lack of transparency and such a lack of honesty that, you know, we've now created a situation where everybody got way too comfortable in their belief systems that, you know, we maybe perhaps should not be that rigid as a society. And so in that regard, I do think that there might be some well-meaning people at, you know, government institutions that say, you know, I don't know if we can create this kind of chaos. Again, I'm not saying that they should or should not release the information. I'm saying that that's probably a consideration for some of them when we're just thinking of each other as human beings, which brings this question of like, you know, maybe this ties in with solutions a little bit too. So much of what we might deem as solutions on this planet, whether it be in the energy structure, the food infrastructure, whether it be for housing, whether it be for agriculture, whatever it is, so much of the solution is here. It's within us, right? It's a solution of being able to navigate our thinking, get clear on our thinking, be able to regulate our physiologies from being, you know, moving out of a stress state all the time to being in a state where we can feel comfortable with a little bit more chaotic situations. You know, this is called having the capacity or having the resilience to be able to bounce back from things that are uncomfortable. The capacity is really having the energy, having the ability, having even the skills at times to be able to navigate situations that are challenging, that are difficult, that challenge our deep belief systems. We live in a society where culturally that has been not only bred out of people, but our day-to-day lives make it very challenging to let ourselves go into that state of being. And so I very much see as part of the solution is people need to get into the state of being, the state of mind, which is, you know, this is all scientifically validated stuff. When we start talking about the nervous system, when we start talking about our basic biology and how that functions with our brains and how we can critically think and how we can see clearly, how we can move beyond the threat response that we seem to be in all the time. These are things that are extremely important as a prerequisite to be able to explore a lot of the difficult things that are coming up. The idea of a greater reset, right, is suggesting we can create a world. So, okay, let me backtrack for a second. The Great Reset is suggesting something. Hey, let's overhaul our entire world, and maybe we can do it in 10 years. You don't have a say over what we do, though. And what you're suggesting with your project is, here are some responses to what the Great Reset might be saying. Here's the solutions that are possible. Let's disclose them to people. And let's see how we can get there. And plus, we probably want you to have a say over some of this stuff, right? Either way, we have a transition. We have to move out of the worldview that we have today, that we're comfortable with, that we've known, that our biology knows, and that our physiology knows, right? And we have to start envisioning what that transition looks like, which the vision of that can sometimes be very uncomfortable. How will it go? What will it look like? What will happen to me? What will happen to my well-being? What will happen to my money? What does day one of the transition look like? What is day five? What is day 10? What is day 30? What is day 100? This takes capacity to be able to be comfortable with moving through this stuff. So I love the idea and the topic of solutions, and we have to talk about this stuff. But that other piece is also extremely important, because this is the piece that allows us to start actually doing it and not just fight with each other and latch on to everything that we know in a way of protecting our state of being, which can sometimes be a fragile thing right now.
Absolutely. Again, so much good stuff there, Brother Joe. You know what you reminded me of as you're talking about that? I really appreciate that I don't know if you guys do it for every article or if it's just the ones that are going to be pretty intense, where there's sort of like a pre-intro into the article that's like reminding people, take a deep breath, you know, really kind of reflect and think about how this is going to, like you said, the physiology of how you're about to read some pretty intense information. This might make you feel nervous or stressed, and really kind of prepare for that. Because I think that is something that's missing in the conversation, whether we're talking about UFOs, we're talking about QAnon, we're talking about the Great Reset, for us to really strive to be the ones in control up here in our heads and in our hearts, so that we can have that critical thinking, we can have that discernment, and being able to practice some of these tools that you've offered here. And I really appreciate that. And yes, everyone, Joe will be joining us for the second Greater Reset. It is happening May 24th through the 28th. It is going to be completely free online. You can watch at our website, thegreaterreset.org, Monday through Friday. We're going to have 4 hours of programming each day focused on a different theme, just like last time. And if anybody's interested in coming and being in person around other people, there's going to be an official gathering in Austin, Texas, and then I'll be having one down here in Mexico as well. But what I'm excited about, Joe, is to have you on that, because, you know, I think you're going to bring not only the perspective of working in the conscious media for a decade now and all the things we've gone over today, but really trying to help people see that despite everything, despite the overwhelming nature of what we are facing, still the kind of COVID-1984, what is 2021 going to hold for traveling, you know, immunity passports and all these kinds of things. There's a lot of heavy stuff that people are dealing with. And you're right that we need to start the journey there, right? Like, obviously, if we had never as individuals come across this scary, dark information, then you never would have felt inspired to create collective evolution, right? If you hadn't gone down the path you described earlier, and I probably wouldn't have felt called to do the things I'm doing. And so I tend to feel like this is the yin and the yang, right? We, for the moment, need these darker, heavier elements to inspire us to start looking for solutions. And so if there wasn't the World Economic Forum planning this Great Reset and you'll own nothing and you'll be happy sort of vision, then perhaps, you know, we wouldn't have felt called to say, hey, well, what does a people's reset look like? What is a greater reset from the people top, you know, instead of top down, coming from the grassroots level up? What does that really look like? And how can we present people with practical solutions in the areas of health, mental, spiritual, physical health, food, economics, you know, community building and organizing? And I don't know if you've experienced the same thing, but I can say the last year I've seen so many people really, I think, shifting away at the same time as all we've seen, the kind of confusion about the truth and speculation and all that. I've also seen an immense push towards, I'm ready to do something. I'm ready to take proactive steps in my life. Whether that means I want to grow a garden and plant some seeds, or it's time for me to get right with my own spirit, my own heart, my own mind. And I think that you will be able to provide some really, really powerful information on that. And you will be speaking on our Body, Mind, Soul Day. Did you want to say anything? Just add anything else to that?
Yeah, I have some, the stuff that I'm excited to share in that is going to, I think, answer a question that a lot of people that they think about, which is, you know, guys, you know, I'm listening to what you guys are saying. It's like, yeah, this all sounds great, but the time is running out, and this stuff's happening, and the world's getting more intense by the day, and COVID passports and all this stuff, we have to resist. And there's an observation there that is correct. However, there's a very interesting distinction that needs to be made between an immediate threat and what that does to our physiology, and a logical recognition of where something's going, and which is kind of what's happening, and how if we're perceiving something as immediate threat, it can really work against us, and in a lot of ways. So I'm going to be hoping to make a lot of distinctions there and offer some solutions as to how we can be extremely effective dealing with you know, what's happening out there without being complacent, but without allowing the threat response to take over and actually inhibit ourselves.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds like that's going to be great, brother. I appreciate that. I appreciate all the work that you're doing. I appreciate you being involved. I hope that everybody, if you haven't ever been to Collective Evolution, go over there, get signed up. Also, I should mention you guys do CETV still, correct, right? If people want to sign up to get access to videos.
Yeah, videos and courses now and stuff like that too. We're really trying to take a little bit more of an active approach of help, you know, just helping us all just get these skills and then use these skills. And it helps us to get feedback on, you know, what are people dealing with out there and that sort of stuff too. So it's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, I will include all the relevant links in the show notes as always. Guys, thank you for being with us for this conversation. We kept Joe a little longer than intended. We talked today about the purpose, the goal of the truth movement. And I just hope that everybody listening to this conversation will sit and reflect on that a little bit. Maybe go back and listen to some of the conversations we had about, you know, holding each other accountable and the roles that we as individuals play. But ultimately, reflect and ask yourself: are you in these spaces and in these movements to be entertained, to be informed, to change the world, to change yourself? And I think once you have that answer, then you can move forward a little bit more conscious and a little bit more aware in this space, which can be confusing at times. But thank you guys for listening. This has been the Activation Podcast. We had Joe Martino of Collective Evolution. Until next time, remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Activation Podcast, brought to you by the Conscious Resistance Network. You can find our podcast on Spotify, on Pinecast, and most podcast downloading sites. If you want to find more about our work, please look at theconsciousresistance.com, where you can find the full archive of shows. Thank you. Mm-hmm.